The date is December 17th, 2021, and we're watching Spider-Man No Way Home. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, a special bonus episode of I Used to Like This One. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Peter Parker to my Peter Parker.
I'm Peter 3? Peter 3.
Sure, Peter
3.
Hello,
I'm Colin Stewart.
Okay, so we're just going to jump right into it here. We are recording this after we have both watched Spider-Man No Way Home, our recent Spider-Man episode that came out on New Year's Eve. We had said that we recorded that before, and we just wanted to kind of record a bit of a bonus episode here with the with our reactions, because we didn't have them at the time of recording our last episode. So Colin, I think we need to start off with the most important of statements for anyone that could be listening to this show right now. Let's give them our patented, because no one else does it, patented spoiler warning.
Yes, for all you listening, for all you listening out there in the podcast world, hear my voice. There will be spoilers from this point on. So if you do not want your mind to be split open like the multiverse itself, hit pause, go watch the movie, and then come back and hear what we have to say. Because this is the first spoiler. They fucking did it, you guys! They brought back Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire, and it was the most amazing thing I've ever seen on a screen in my fucking life, probably until... But I mean, they already spoiled that they're bringing Michael Keaton's Batman back, but yeah. Like, holy shit, guys. Like, it is... Oh my gosh, amazing.
Yeah, I lost my fucking mind. Yes, here we go. Spider-Man No Way Home. I still don't quite know what I watched. Now, I know back in our Spider-Man episode, we both talked about Tobey Maguire and how we weren't a big fan of Tobey Maguire, but I did say that if he does show up in the new movie, I am going to lose my fucking mind, and I will be very excited to see him. I kind of like old Tobey Maguire Spider-Man, I have to say.
I agree. I think that old Tobey, like, I was, as we discussed before, I love Andrew Garfield, and I was so psyched to see Andrew Garfield. Mm-hmm. I was surprised at the level to which I loved seeing Tobey Maguire. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, my favorite scenes in the movie weren't even the parts with Tom Holland. They were the parts between Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man and Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man. Like, the back-cracking scene, the pep talk that Tobey Maguire's
you are
Spider-Man
amazing.
Gives him.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just like, that scene, literally, it almost made me cry. I just thought it was so heartwarming and so, like, the thing about the scenes with those two Spider-Man in particular is, like, to their credit, Toby's great, but especially for Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man, they did such a good job of speaking to the shittiness around everything that surrounded those movies. Mm-hmm. Because, like, they didn't really get a fair shake. You know, there were some problems with casting. We know that, like, Andrew Garfield wasn't happy with how things turned out, and because he, like, really loved Spider-Man, but it was, like, there's a lot of money on the table, so there's a lot of, like, decisions that weren't, like, in his control and that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. and ultimately the movies just got scrapped kind of prematurely, in my opinion. But just that scene alone where he's giving him the pep talk about, like, you know, like, no, you are... And even, like, to go back... When they show up and they're dealing with, man, I'm jumping around too much. You know what? We'll go back. The pep talk, just that scene, made my heart melt. It was just so nice. And it just felt like this. It just felt like redemption for that Spider-Man, which is something, personally, I've always wanted to see.
Yeah. I love all the conversations between the Spider-Man. And like you said, like, Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield definitely had chemistry. Like, the part where he's walking him off at the end, it really hurts, doesn't it? Oh, more than you know. Like, they had, you know, as the older Spider-Man, they had this great chemistry. But I even love when they're all just sitting there talking, and I once fought this alien made of black goo. And, oh, I fought an alien too, in space. He had this purple chin, and Andrew Garfield just, I want to fight an alien.
He's like, I'm so lame. Or when they're in the lab, and I didn't expect this to be as funny as it was, but like when they talk about the web shooters, and
how,
you know,
Toby shoots out of his arm,
and he's and they're all just like, whoa, like, yeah,
you guys can't do that. No, I have to make mine in a lab.
Yeah, I thought that was good. Even when they first show up, like, that scene is funny with Ned's mom. But, you know, another spoiler alert, unfortunately, like, my top 10 girl of my dreams, Marissa Tomei, Aunt May, gets murked by the green goblin.
Oh, I know.
Which was, I think, to be honest, that was one of the most unexpected moments of the movie for me. I did not expect her to die. And it set up an interesting thing that I had never considered before, is that
Aunt May is his Uncle Ben?
Yeah, Tom Holland's Spider-Man is the first Spider-Man without Uncle Ben.
Yeah.
And it just made me realize, like, I had always assumed the way he comes in, like, he was already, that they were just skipping all of that, that the Uncle Ben thing had happened, and, you know, they just skipped over all that and just went straight to he's Spider-Man, and then Iron Man gave him the new souped-up suit. I had never for once considered that he had never had the great power, great responsibility talk, and that Uncle Ben wasn't in that picture at all. That Aunt May would end up becoming his Uncle Ben, which I thought was a really cool... It's just a really cool way to separate the MCU Spider-Man from other Spider-Man mythos.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, like, she gets killed, and then that scene when he's on the roof and he meets Toby and Andrew, Peter 2, Peter 3 for the first time, and they share their different stories...
I love how Andrew Garfield's didn't focus on Uncle Ben.
Yeah, his focus is more on the Gwen thing, which was a nice touch.
Yeah. It was a nice spin, and so you realize that they all have different origin
focal
stories
points.
In a way. Yeah, focal points in their origin stories. But, you know, I gotta say, with a line like, there was a point when I just stopped pulling my punches, I want to see that Spider-Man 3.
I know, man.
Like, holy shit.
I've heard rumors that, like, based on the success of this movie, that they might be doing...
I know.
Some form of a Spider-Man 4 with Tobey Maguire, but it seems more...
animated for him.
Yeah, but a live action with Andrew Garfield.
Yeah, which would be insane.
And yeah, like, I want to know what that was. Like, I want to see what... happened there. And that's also, but even with Toby, it's like, you can tell that things with him and Mary Jane were not great. They're like, they're just like, I want to know what's happening with there. Like, the writers did such a good job of, like, in just literally two sentences, telling you what has happened in the intervening time, and that neither of it has gone that well.
Yeah.
In an interesting way.
Well, and there's so much subtext that is played so much better than when we watched Spider-Man, you know, for our last episode. When Dr. Octopus says to Tobey Maguire, how have you been, Peter? And he's like, you know, I'm trying to be better. You know, and it's just, there's so much that he says in that, whereas, like, all the subtext that was in the other Tobey Maguire acting was terrible. But in this movie, it's like, oh, I like this Peter Parker. I like Tobey Maguire as the aged Spider-Man, you know?
Old man Spider-Man.
Old man Spider-Man. Yeah, it was great.
I also kind of liked it, even, like, I've thought about this movie a lot. But even for the villains, there's something that I really like. Like, I like that aspect of they're all being pulled out because, basically, they were all killed by Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. Although, and I don't even remember if that's necessarily true for the Amazing Spider-Man villains. I don't know if they die or not. But for Doc Ock and And Flint doesn't die in Spider-Man 3.
No, but, no, he blows away on the wind.
Yeah, but for Doc Ock and the Green Goblin specifically, there was something really poetic about that to me, because I feel like in the 90s and 2000s, it's like superhero movies didn't know how to move on if the villain didn't die.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they didn't know how to move on with the story if the villain didn't die again, because maybe they just thought, like, well, then they just have to keep coming back. And so they would, yeah. It always bothered me, like, Batman is the most notable one. Like, you kill the Joker in the first movie, like, why?
Yeah.
Why would you ever do that?
Well, I like in Dark Knight, though, where they decide to kill off the wrong villain, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. But then I remember even watching Spider-Man, the same thing, like Doc Ock and the Green Goblin, I'd say, are like one and two Spider-Man's greatest villains.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to kill them off? Like, why? Yeah. Like, why? they need to be there somehow. Even if they're not the main guy, it's still good to have them around for like the future. But I think, again, back in the day, it's like people were really only thinking of trilogies. And they weren't thinking about these massive cinematic universes like we have now.
Yeah.
So there's something about, I'm hoping, like, kind of maybe the theory of what this movie did is, like, it's almost like it pulled them out right before they died. Or, like, maybe they're back to life in their own universes somehow.
Yeah.
I'm hoping. But
yeah.
I thought that was a cool way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And even with, like, the lizard and Sandman, unfortunately for them, it's like, there was just too much other firepower and, like, story there to really give those two a fair shake at having some compelling, you know, character development.
But yeah. I do like some of the banter between them, though, when they're all locked up. And, like, you know, I appreciate the fact that it's like, wait a minute, shit, I know you. This is what happened to you. Like, I like how they can update each other on each other's lives. And if I hadn't binge-watched all the Spider-Man, it would have also been nice to have been brought up to date. But luckily, I was already up to date anyway.
Yeah, me too.
But,
but yeah, I agree. I also think my other big takeaway from this movie is that after Iron Man died in Endgame, I really thought that they were going to position Spider-Man to take his place.
Yeah.
As kind of like the focal point of the MCU. But now it's pretty clear that that role is going to Doctor Strange. Like, yeah. I think Doctor Strange going forward is going to kind of be that axis of where things revolve around that Iron Man was for the previous 10 years or whatever.
Yeah, at least until all the multiverse shit is done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The multiverse seems to me like it's going to be what the Infinity Stones were. Like, it's going to be this
Several years that's saga.
That's going to kind of be the overarching thing, right? Like, it'll be like, yeah, maybe if the last one was the Infinity Saga, then I think we've entered the multiverse saga now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's also, like, even in the ending, the idea that everybody has forgotten Spider-Man, including all the Avengers, is kind of interesting to me because, you know, in Civil War, he just shows up out of nowhere, and that's fine. But it's like knowing the backdoor dealing between Marvel and Sony, part of me is also a little bit scared that, like, they've done that to not bring Spider-Man. Because now everybody's forgotten about him. It's almost like he doesn't have to come back.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Part of me, to be honest, is a little bit scared about that idea that maybe Tom Holland Spider-Man is going to exist in the Morbius Venom somewhere. Like, because
he has signed on for three new movies, though.
He has, though, yeah. That's true.
But, like, are they planning on pulling the Morbius universe into this? Into the MCU?
I don't know. So, probably, if I had to say the one thing that really disappointed me about the movie, if there was one thing, it's the Venom scene in the credits.
Mm.
Like, I was super psyched at the end of Venom 2 when they used this trick to pull Tom Hardy into the MCU, and I was like, oh, sweet. It's all going to be combined.
Yeah.
Let it stay that way. Everything makes sense. But the fact that they then lazily, in my opinion, it's like As much as the writers were phenomenal for the rest of the movie, I think this is the laziest way to bring the symbiote into the MCU. Didn't really appreciate it at all. Is like, then they take Venom out and take him back to his own world.
Yeah.
And then, like, I don't know when you watched it, but when I watched it, they had the Morbius trailer before the movie. And in that trailer, there's a part where he's walking past a Spider-Man poster on a wall, which says Spider-Man murderer.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's also weird because Michael Keaton
shows up in Morbius. Yeah.
But he's also in Homecoming. Mm-hmm. But then in Morbius, they also make reference to what happened in L.A., like referring, I'm assuming, to Venom. So I thought that Morbius and Venom were in the same world. But then this is where, like, the multiverse stuff comes into, like, weirdness, because it's clear that, you know, J.K. Simmons plays J. Jonah Jameson in two universes.
Yeah.
So is Michael Keaton as Alistair Toombs the same character in two universes?
Mm. That's another question.
But then I thought that in Venom's world there was no Spider-Man, because my reasoning behind that was, like, if you're going to have, like, Venom is synonymous with Spider-Man, so in my mind, anyways, you always need Spider-Man. Spider-Man leads to Venom, not the other way around.
Yeah,
so, like, to have a Venom created where Spider-Man isn't involved at all is just odd. But if they're in the same world as Morbius, and now he's walking past a Spider-Man poster, clearly Spider-Man is in that world.
Unless that's digitally added for the trailer, which is another conspiracy I've heard.
Unless it's digitally added. But then I've also heard rumors that Andrew Garfield is the Spider-Man in the Venom Morbius place.
Okay. And I have a strong feeling Blade is going to make a post-credit show up in Morbius as well.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't watched Eternals, but I heard that Blade shows up in the post-credit scene for Eternals.
Oh, see, I haven't seen Eternals yet either. Yeah, that's one I'm not excited about, you know?
Yeah, it just didn't capture my interest, unfortunately.
So I saw this on the 19th, and I managed to avoid, like, Facebook, Instagram, like, any spoilers. Anytime a news story came up in my drop-down Google feed, you know, I swiped it away immediately as soon as I saw Spider-Man in the title. So I avoided everything, except foolishly, I went on to Netflix the night before to watch something, and I saw what was trending, and Daredevil was trending. And I'm like, well, that answers that question. And sure enough, when he showed up in the movie, I lost my shit, but I had a feeling, out of everything I knew about Spider-Man, that Matt Murdock was going to make that appearance that was leaked to the internet. And I was happy to see him as well.
I was very happy. Like, I hope all those Netflix guys get a fair shake at the MCU. But specifically, Daredevil, like Charlie Cox and John Bernthal. Like, if those guys aren't Daredevil and the Punisher, then I'm pissed.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you can recast Iron Fist all you want. I don't give a fuck about that guy, but...
Have you gotten your Disney Plus back to watch Hawkeye?
I haven't yet, but I heard that, like, Kingpin shows up, and
okay.
I wasn't able to avoid that spoiler, unfortunately.
Okay, yeah, because they really seem to be going for it, and I've heard theories that maybe Matt Murdock will show up in the She-Hulk series as well. So it looks like Charlie Cox is firmly getting placed into the MCU, so there could be a possibility at Daredevil stuff down the road.
Well, I think I thought they had announced that they're doing a Daredevil Disney Plus show called, but it's going to be called, like, The Devil of Hell's Kitchen.
Oh, I hadn't heard Daredevil. That. Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Right on.
Because I was figuring that at the very least he would show up somehow in Moon Knight.
Yeah.
Because those characters are fairly closely related.
Okay. That I didn't know. But I did like the scene with Daredevil, though, in the kitchen where he catches the brick.
Yeah. Yeah, that was good.
Yeah. Yeah, and great detail that, like, Peter Parker is there catching it as well. I also love the detail that when he gets his astral projection knocked out of his body by Doctor Strange, that you can see spider sense lines above his head as he's floating there.
I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, Like, they're faint, but yeah.
I'm going to watch
it
again tomorrow, so...
Nice, nice, yeah. Yeah, he has spider sense. So, like, that's the thing, is, like, him moving the box around with his hand and Doctor Strange can't get it, that's all spider sense. That just shows how powerful Spider-Man actually is.
Yeah, I think the one I really thought... I mean, I'm very excited now to watch the Multiverse of Madness. I also need, when I do get my Disney Plus, it looks like I need to actually go and sit down and watch What If... Yeah. But I thought part of me the whole movie was I thought Doctor Strange was going to end up being like a bad guy.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a lot of pre-theory of that angle. I definitely heard. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm kind of glad they didn't take that route, though.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
There was enough going on to like add that in the mix, I think would have been too much.
Yeah.
But. I think the other all-star, like, Alfred Molina, I mean, like, don't get me wrong, I like Jamie Foxx well enough, but Electro is just not a villain that does it for me, and I still, like, I don't think he found a really good way into that character the first go-around.
Yeah.
And other than his appearance, I don't think they did much better this go-around.
No.
But Willem Dafoe turned it up to another level. That guy is just so, like... He did such a good job of playing. He does such a good job of playing that dual role of Norman Osborn and the Goblin playing Norman Osborn.
Yeah,
like it's such a weird thing, but it's like he's so good at it.
Well, that whole spider sense moment where Peter realizes one of these guys is about to turn on him. You know, that was such a great moment. But yeah, just the complete switch of Willem Dafoe though, the moment that he webs his hand. Where he's like, yeah. You know, oh, that clever little tingle of yours, Peter, or whatever, you know.
Yeah, and then yeah, you're right. Like the doc. I think I recently watched Spider-Man 2 and started watching Spider-Man 3, but I had forgotten kind of that nuance of Dr. Octopus about how like basically his real self is kind of locked in there and it's like the arm's taking control.
Yeah.
Because that chip or whatever is broken.
Mm-hmm.
I liked that aspect of after they fix him and he kind of like becomes himself again. And when he showed up to save the day, I was just like, oh man, like this is so good.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
But
I like that they closed a lot of stories though, too. Mm-hmm. Where it's like you gave Andrew Garfield the opportunity to talk to Electro at the end, where it's like, no, you do matter or whatever. I mean, there were some lines that were a little rough, like, you know, I'm something of a scientist myself. It's like, you guys went there.
There was a lot of callback lines that were kind of just like. I think having, like, watching, especially the Tobey Maguire ones, watching them so recently, you're like, oh, I see what you did.
Yeah. Well, and you kind of have to laugh, too, at that line, because it's like, well, Dr. Octopus is also a scientist, and so is the lizard.
Yeah.
Like, and is Electro a scientist, too, or is he just, like, a lab assistant? Or is he just a janitor?
I actually can't remember what he is.
Like, he had blueprints the first time he met Spider-Man in that. I don't know.
Yeah. I did like that one line when they're talking about, like who are they talking? Like, what was it?
What, the Miles Morales shout-out?
That one where he's like, oh, I thought you'd be black.
Yeah.
I mean, that was funny for multiple reasons. There is the Miles Morales thing, but I don't know if you remember around the time... That was also the time when, after Spider-Man 4 got canceled, Donald Glover was really campaigning to play Peter Parker in the next Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And people were, like, super shitty about it and mm-hmm. being like, oh, like, Spider-Man can't be black, blah, blah, blah. Like, Peter Parker can't be black. And so, obviously, Andrew Garfield got cast. So I kind of, like, I don't know if that's what they think. They probably intended more for the Miles Morales thing, and I'm just reading into things, but yeah. I also thought that was funny.
I think a lot of their little subtle jokes are also poking fun at any controversies that were surrounding these things at the time, too, though. Like, there were mm-hmm. definitely a few where, like, even the whole bit about him having his web block at one point because of his little emotional crisis, like, you could tell that they were kind of making a nod at it of, yeah, we know this was stupid. when it happened. Yeah. You know, things like that.
I like the part. The part I was thinking of was when they're talking about Electro and how he fell into like a pool of electric eels and like.
Oh yeah.
He's like, oh yeah, you got to be careful what you fall into.
Yeah, I fell into a super collider. He was talking to Sandman.
Yeah, right.
Gotta so watch. Funny. Yeah, and then they even the Spider-Men are talking about it later on, where he's like, "Oh yeah, I know he fell into a vat of electric eels," and the other Spider-Man goes, "Oh, that'll do it," you know.
Yeah, so good.
Yeah,
I did feel like the whole stuff with MJ again. I like that because her name ends up not being Mary Jane. I can't remember what it is.
It's Mary Jones Watson.
So it's like, I like that in the MCU, it reminded me a lot of the Ultimate Universe in the comics, where it's like things are kind of the same, but like they're also like fundamentally different.
Yeah.
It's just, that's something that I've always really hoped that the MCU would embrace more. And I know like a lot of people who are big fans of comics are always like, well, that's not how it happened in the comics, blah 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 blah. But I'm like, at some point I want them to just take the characters and make them their own thing, and like, because I don't want their stories to always have to be beholden to what happened in the comics, right? Like,
yeah.
So that's something that I really appreciate about what the MCU is doing with that.
Yeah, it's a also different universe.
Yeah. I also like that they gave Ned the sorcerer powers.
Mm.
I thought that was cool, because now he finally had something like cool to do, something that was his own.
Yeah. I can't get over just how funny this movie is at points. And then just absolutely rips your heart out when they do something like kill off Aunt May.
Mm-hmm.
But my God, those three sitting, I could watch another 2.5 hours of just the Spider-Men sitting around talking about like the mundane things in their life.
You know, seriously,
like,
yeah.
Yeah. Like just even the like the bit where he's hanging from the ceiling. This isn't enough for you? Crawl around on the ceiling. Stop throwing bread. Like that was hilarious. But yeah,
get the cobwebs.
get the cobweb. But when they're all standing around at the Statue of Liberty, like, you know, okay, who's the weirdest villain you ever fought? Well, I did fight this Russian guy in a rhinoceros suit once. So, I mean, even like one line that kind of gives a little bit of closure to that storyline, that it's like, okay, we acknowledge it. It happened. He fought him. Yeah.
Yeah.
And obviously survived, because he lived to tell the tale.
Yeah, that's true. And even like, I knew it was going to happen as soon as like the sequence of events unfolded, but the scene where Peter 3 catches MJ was just, again, it's so cathartic. It's such a nice way to like give that Spider-Man his moment and have things to, like, I love those moments when it's like they get the opportunity to do what they couldn't do before.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, that's like the true, I don't know what it is. Yeah. It's just like the true hero moment, where like heroes are gonna fail, but it's always nice to see them get the second shot and succeed.
Yeah. Are you okay? Yeah. Are you? Like, yeah. Like, oh, I want to hug Andrew Garfield.
Yeah. And I don't know about you, but I totally thought that Toby got killed by the Goblin. I was like gonna cry, because I was like, how are you doing this? Like, why? Why did they all just got to know each other. Why did you have to kill him?
Yeah.
I was very, very happy when he was just hurt.
Really badly, but hurt. And I mean, like, even the when Tom Holland, and I mean, my God, does he get vicious? Oh, is he a rough fighter? Like, first of all, the hallway scene, but then later when he's just pummeling him, when he webs Green Goblin's feet to the shield so that he can just go to work on him. But like when Toby catches the glider, you know, and they don't say anything, where it's just like, oh, but he said everything at the same time, right? Yeah. Like, it's just like, there were some great, great moments in this movie. I mean, Tobey Maguire so made up for any of the shortcomings he had when we watched Spider-Man.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Especially because I think we did our Spider-Man episode like only a couple weeks before it came out, and I was just like so at that time having watched, like, oh, like, I hate Tobey Maguire. Blah.
Yeah,
so I was just so happy to see him when he came on the screen, and my heart, it, like the Grinch, my heart just grew three sizes when he appeared and just had his little awkward little, hi.
Yeah. are you gonna come and join us dressed like a cool youth pastor?
Oh yeah, that was hilarious.
Oh my god. Now, I will say that I found there to be one huge missed opportunity in this movie, or what I felt like was a missed opportunity, is when they try to cure Norman Osborn the first time and they stab him with the thing and he just it does nothing to him. I would have liked to have seen it like mutate him slightly. Turn him a little bit green, maybe elongate his ears and nose. Because I love once he smashes the mask, how they've got the hoodie going on and they're giving you this very comic accurate Green Goblin look. That I wish they had turned his face a little bit green, you know, some sort of side effect, some sort of mutation. That's what I felt was a big missed opportunity.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, actually, because I remember we talked about the mask in our podcast and just about how it just seemed to really handicap Willem Dafoe's acting ability just because you couldn't see it. And I thought it was just a stroke of genius. You know, it's cool to see it when he first shows up and you see it and you get to see it. But I'm glad that they dispensed of it pretty quickly. And for the rest of it, it's just Willem Dafoe.
Now, I will say, when he does show up, that's one part of the movie that I find very jarring, though, is that he shows up, he throws the bomb, and then all of a sudden, Peter has been magicked back to Doctor Strange's lair.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that moment very weird and jarring, because it's like, okay, now at this point, Dr. Octopus has now been captured. He's already captured two other people, but it's like, what about the bridge? What's going on the bridge? Like, why is Peter now suddenly just standing here? And yeah, I found that bit a bit odd.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's true.
That whole opening scene, though, I could, or well, not the opening scene, but the whole bit with the bridge fight with Dr. Octopus. Yeah. I remember looking at that going, they're doing it already? It's already started? Are you fucking kidding me? Okay, here we go. I was so excited when that kicked off. Yeah.
Yeah, I was wondering if they were gonna, and I think to your point with like getting the three Spider-Man, it's like, I felt like I would have wanted more time. They gave you a good amount of time. Like, it would have been really easy, I think, to just be like, you know, almost like they just show up at the kind of at the end type thing to help save the day.
Yeah.
But I like that they showed up when they did, and they actually like try to help save the, or no, they're not there. They're not there when he's coming up with the plan to try to fix them originally.
Not originally, yeah.
They come later, yeah.
Yeah. When they show up later, it's, okay, I need your help fixing all these things that I was going to use to fix these guys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the plan's already failed once.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think they did the right thing with Flash Thompson in this movie, I will say.
It's kind of funny. I didn't really like Flash Thompson. I always even forget that he's in these movies because the guy who plays Flash Thompson is not like any Flash Thompson I've ever seen before.
Yeah.
Like, but he is, you're right. He is an interesting version of that character because in the other two movies, he's the jock, like the, you know, the, that jock asshole.
Yeah. Physical threat.
Yeah.
Like, I just like the, you know what I want, Peter. Fine, I'll tell everybody you're my best friend. Wait a minute. I can just go argue my case? I can do that? Are you telling me that you came here to have me erase everybody's memory before you went and asked her? Yeah, I think they used the side characters just enough as well. Like, you know, there are some other movies where it feels like even the other Spider-Man movies where it feels very much like, oh, okay, Far From Home. It's like, oh, okay, this is a Spider-Man and Nick Fury movie. Mm-hmm. You know, whereas, you know, or the first one, it's like, oh, this is a Spider-Man and Iron Man movie. But this one, I think they use Doctor Strange kind of just the right amount that I like having them trap him away, hanging over the Grand Canyon for 12 hours.
Yeah.
You know, it's a nice way to get rid of him for a little while. Or even Happy. They didn't overuse Happy in this as well.
Yeah, they didn't overuse him, but that scene when he shows up after May's has been killed was like, that was a really emotional, like, the scene is already super emotional, but it's just like, you just feel so bad for, like, even when the movie opens and you find out that they're breaking up, like, you feel so bad for Happy. There's yeah. something about him where you're just like, oh, he just likes her so much. You just want you want them to work out.
And she's so nonchalant about, no, it was just a fling.
Yeah.
So is it like...
Heartless Aunt May.
Happy is to Aunt May the same way that Peter was to Happy in the previous movies, where it's like, he's probably texting Aunt May 100 times a day. And
yeah. yeah. With everybody forgetting him and... he becomes Spider-Man again. Like, it's cool. It's kind of cool to see, even though obviously his suits are very like standard Spider-Man-esque, but it almost mm-hmm. looked to me like he made a choice to almost emulate the suits of the other two Spider-Man when he made his own.
Yeah.
And yeah. You don't really get to get a good look at it because the lighting on it's kind of dark, but
yeah, and he's in the snow and
yeah, but it'll be kind of cool to see going forward, because that was kind of always my thing about Spider-Man in the MCU, is that he ends up just being Iron Man light because he has basically all Stark tech, like everything. He doesn't really have to be the Spider-Man. He's really like Iron Spider the whole way through.
We've got competition, boys.
He's just relying on the Stark tech for most of it. So mm-hmm. now it'll be kind of cool to see him go back to that like grassroots Spider-Man.
Deconstructed Spider-Man.
Yeah, and see how that goes.
I love the shot of him in the rain standing in front of that billboard though after Aunt May dies. Oh
yeah,
what an image. What an image.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, to me the movie is, it's the perfect movie for me and people yeah. like me. Anybody who's been like a comic book superhero fan their entire life, who like grew up watching Spider-Man cartoons and loving and like waited forever for all the movies and would go watch any movie no matter how bad it is.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're in a world where we actually get to see, like, and even to go back to the Batman thing, the idea that I'm going to get to see in a few months, like, Michael Keaton's Batman return
yeah.
to the screen is, like, earth-shatteringly cool to me. Mm-hmm. And they pulled that off, I would say, tenfold. I feel bad for that movie because it cannot be better. Like, it just can't be better than how the Spider-Man was. The Spider-Man, it was just executed perfectly.
Yeah.
There's obviously, we've talked about this, like, there's some, like, small issues, but, like, bringing the other Spider-Man into the fold and how they did it and what they did with it, I think was executed 10 out of 10. It could not have been done better other than to give you more.
No, they wrapped up seven movies very well. Like, is it necessarily... I've been having this debate with people lately. Like, is it the best movie in the MCU? I don't know if it's the best movie in the MCU, but my God, it is the best of the Spider-Man. Because it wraps everything up.
Yeah, yeah. I've been trying to wrap my head around that too, because I don't think it's the best movie in the MCU. I still think that, like, the Infinity War Endgame combo and probably, like, to me, like, Winter Soldier,
yeah,
is, I think those are like the best movies in the MCU.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the only way I can describe No Way Home is it's a miracle. Like,
yeah,
it's a Christmas miracle.
Like, it really was. Yeah, I mean, like, I even like the fact that when you have the three of them together, you, even when they're all masked, you can kind of tell who is who because of how they're doing the moves. Like, you know, Andrew Garfield's guy likes doing the shot, the slingshot up a building. That's kind of his go-to move. But, like, I can't wait until this is out on a platform where I can slow it down.
Yeah.
Because, like, some of the aerial stuff that they're doing when they're throwing each other through the air.
Yeah, I was going to say that scene when they're the three of them are go- and you're right. You can tell each one, like, each one has their individual nuance. Like,
their poses.
Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man is very, like, lanky and loose. Tobey Maguire's is kind of, like, he just seems very boxy. And then Tom Holland is, like, kind of the in-between. He's more childlike, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, that scene when they're three of them are swinging and they do that weird where they're like swinging off each other's webs or whatever and throwing each other around was,
yeah.
I was like, man, I want more of that.
Yeah, I definitely want more of that. I want an endgame length ending of that. But they still gave me a pretty good amount. I wanted more and more and more. I got greedy. They gave me everything I wanted and I got greedy because I just wanted more.
Yeah, I know. And I was like, now that you see them do this, it's like, okay, well, like, I raise you now go and just give me a live action, like, full-on Spider-Verse movie where I get to see 20 different Spider-Men from all different universes and
invent me a couple new Spider-Men. Give me Spider-Man Noir played by Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it'll be interesting to see with Spider-Man because I think as they have, like, the next thing to do is to introduce Miles Morales somehow. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if it's going to be like more of, you know, now Peter is going to take the Tony role to like mentor this new Spider-Man type thing. Yeah. I hope that's kind of what they do.
I mean, with the fact that Tom Holland has signed on for another trilogy, do you think they would like make it a team-up like a three-series team-up movie with the two of them? Or do you think they would introduce Miles Morales and then send Miles Morales off to do some other Spider-Man movies?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of hard to think of, like, with Spider-Man, where do you go next? Like, I mean, clearly it's Venom. Like, that's the next thing to do. But after Venom, it's like you did the Sinister Six. Like, that's your big thing. All that's left to do is to like this like Spider-Verse, or like really there's like the one thing I think they might do is there's in the comics there's the like one day more, but they kind of did that with him forgetting everybody. In one day more, they like he basically strikes a deal with the devil to get Aunt
Sinestro,
May back.
Yeah.
So like it'd be interesting to see if maybe they do that. Like maybe Aunt May isn't gone for good and they'll find a way to do that. So
yeah, who knows? I don't know. We're just so Spider-Man heavy. If they end up making like other amazing Spider-Man, and like it's just there's just going to be so much Spider-Man content if everything that's rumored comes to fruition. Like,
yeah, I'll be down for all of it.
Well, there we go. That's our bonus episode talking about Spider-Man No Way Home. If you made it to the end of this and you haven't seen the movie, why did you listen to this whole episode? But go see that movie because it's amazing. I mean, it really is. Yeah, it's spectacular. It's sensational. What other ones did he have over the years?
It's Ultimate? It's your Ultimate. It's your Friendly Neighborhood. We're your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man Review Podcast.
There we go. If you like that show, all the same usual stuff. I mean, this is a bonus episode, but go give us 5 stars or tell your friends or, you know, donate to us on Patreon so that we can give you more content and get a shout out just like executive producer Joshua Blum if you go to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne.
And be sure to check out our website, www.IUsedToLikeThisOne.com, where you can find links to all of our podcast episodes, you can find links to all of our social medias, and you can read some incredibly well-written bios of Sean and myself. And if you'd want to email us, you can do so at IUsedToLikeThisOne, all one word, @gmail.com, and let us know what movies you used to like, and then maybe you'll find us talking about them on the show.
I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells. Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band, Carter in the Capitals, anywhere you listen to music. Thanks for listening, and join us next time when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One.